I know that you all have a lot of things on your minds, and in times of uncertainty, clear communications are more important than ever before. Today's special edition of the Employee Forum is designed to explain the reasons behind our strategic announcements of last week and to provide you with an outline of our actions and the context in which those actions will be taken. In this time of critical transition for digital, it is important that all of us avoid overreacting to rumors and stay focused on our individual responsibilities. As one example, I am particularly concerned about the disruption that has been caused by the rumor that Digital is seeking to sell its systems integration capabilities. I'd like to make a few points. Digital's capability in systems and networks integration is absolutely essential to deliver our core value proposition to our customers. We have a significant market share in systems and networks integration. External analysts place Digital in the top five when ranking systems integrators, and our objective is to grow our market position and to extend our leadership in client-server computing. We are not planning to sell this capability as has been rumored. We are looking for ways to increase our effectiveness in supporting our largest customers, and in reducing real or imagined conflicts with other systems integrators whom we want to encourage to sell digital platforms. They represent an important indirect channel for Digital's products and services. Also, we are in the business of providing outsourcing services for client-server computing, where we can capitalize on our core networking and systems platform capabilities in supporting our major accounts. There are many other rumors concerning digital operations that might be sold. I want to assure you that I am dedicated to maintaining those capabilities that support our core value proposition, which is, as you know, to deliver and support, directly and through partners, networked platforms and applications in heterogeneous environments more quickly and more cost-effectively than any other competitor. This value proposition is a key message in the employee forum that you are about to see. The forum provides answers to many questions on the minds of Digital's employees. You will undoubtedly continue to have questions, even after you view the rest of this DVN. Please ask them. My management team and I plan to go to great lengths to keep you informed, consistently and clearly, about important decisions and changes that will affect you and the future of Digital Equipment Corporation. Thank you. Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here this morning, and I appreciate your coming to this employee forum. It's a little different than the others that we've done. Most of the others have been after the earnings announcements, and this one is a little ahead of the earnings announcement, primarily because we've made some management changes, and I wanted to be able to describe those to you and where we are in the transformation of Digital. You've probably seen in print from time to time my reference to this being phase two of our transformation. Phase one, we've been at this 21 months. Phase one was first to say, analyze what we had in terms of talent and bring in new talent to our company, stop the egregious losses that we were suffering at that time and begin to work on our cost structure. We eliminated a lot of redundant engineering programs, as you may recall, and simplified some of the structure. We put in place some business units. And we set the business units up differently. Some of the business units were standalone, essentially vertical organizations. Some of the business units had a traditional digital culture associated with them, a matrix structure that we've had in our company for our entire history, really. And we let that go for a while. We did well the first year. I think we improved the operating results by several hundred million dollars, as I recall. But we didn't sustain it. And as a matter of fact, our costs are still not competitive when benchmarked against those of our leading competitors in similar companies. And we're still working on it. So that's what I'm talking about in terms of the second phase of this transformation. We clearly had done some things very well, and we also had done some things that did not work well. It's interesting that when you analyze the things that worked well, you saw that they had a common characteristic and that they did not have a matrixy characteristic of the ones that didn't do so well, like our traditional core systems business. And so this phase is building on what we learned in the first phase to make some very dramatic changes to digital equipment that will enable us to be much more cost effective and return us to profitability in a sustained way. You've probably seen some headlines or whatever that talk about matrix management and digital is dead. It's my intention that we, to a 95% level or so, expunge matrix management from our culture. This is quite a dramatic change in digital equipment. What you see in a lot of the press reports talks about the restructuring reserves and financial issues, but really from my perspective, this is a more dramatic and important and long-lasting change in our company than are some of the things that have been reported. Oh, by the way, with respect to discussions and reporting and that, I had the opportunity last week to talk to at least 150 of our top management. We actually spoke to management before we spoke to the press, and I think that's quite important. It's impossible for me to speak to all employees before we speak to the press. But we did speak to, and I personally spoke to, the management, then went out and talked to the press, so that's the way we prefer to do it. The purpose of being here this morning is to recap the highlights, at least, of that announcement, explain the thinking behind that, and answer any questions that you might have about how does that impact you and what does it mean for Digital Equipment Corporation. This matrix management idea may have been right, as I've said, when Digital was an emerging company, a much smaller company. But my own perspective is that sometime in the 1980s, it became too unwieldy. There were too many people you had to check with because of all of the overlaps in our matrix structure before anything could actually get decided and implemented. And the computer industry began to speed up quite dramatically from 4 and 5 year product life cycles to very short product life cycles that we have today. Those short product life cycles require a responsiveness to the marketplace, an agility, a decisiveness that we are lacking with our matrix management structure. So what we've done is eliminate that, reorganize the company into a very clean line organization, and primarily by creating two new divisions, the Computer Systems Division and our Components Division. You should be able to see on this slide the organization that exists today. As I mentioned, the two new divisions, they each have within them three business units. You might ask, what's the difference between a division and business units? Actually, a division is a collection of business units that have some synergy among them. Each of the business units has its own P&L, its own engineering, its own sales and marketing function, channels of distribution as appropriate. It's a complete line organization with a P&L and is responsible for the assets employed for the first time in Digital's history. Traditionally, we worried about revenue. Occasionally, we worried about the cost and the profit that ensued there after that. Seldom ever, I think never in our history, did we focus management on the assets employed, the balance sheet items. The intent now and what's in place today ensures that each of the business unit managers is responsible for the assets as well as for the revenues, the costs, and the profits. This is quite a dramatic difference in that the large functional organizations, like functional manufacturing, functional sales and marketing, functional engineering, are largely being disaggregated and placed within the business units that they support, so that we then can have a very streamlined and market-driven, in terms of our engineering products, market-driven organization, and very easy accountability. In the past, when some of our structures did not work well, for example, the CBU structure that we put in place about a year ago did not work well. When you analyze, well, why didn't it, it became quite clear. The CBU manager had the responsibility, but had to negotiate with engineering for the products, had to negotiate with manufacturing about the costs, had to negotiate with sales and marketing about selling those products. It turns out most of the energy was spent negotiating and internally focused. In the case of the very successful business units, like our storage business unit, which was growing at more than 40% annually, the PC business unit, which was growing at more than 100% annually, they had complete line control. They owned their own engineering, manufacturing, marketing, and they were very effective. And so we are implementing that structure that we've tested across all of digital. In addition, you'll notice that there's a new advanced technology group under Bill Strecker, who's the vice president and chief technology officer for this company. That advanced technology group has the function of nurturing emerging technologies that might potentially have market success or the opportunity for market success. The kind of process that we have in mind there is similar to that was implemented in Charlie Crist's organization around video on demand. This is where we've got a team of people focused on a problem, bring some new technology to bear, very, very successful. And we now want to spread that success, in the case of interactive multimedia, across all of digital's product line. But the process is one that the advanced technology group will utilize to develop new capabilities, for example, in mobile computing, object technology, or whatever. And as those technologies reach a critical mass, then we'd decide, well, in which business unit should be the lead business unit for that capability as we take it to the market in a more aggressive way. But you need some way to ensure that you do the engineering and the advanced development without day-to-day worries about the P&L costs and whatever. So it's in a sense, it's a set aside of research and engineering resources and investment to ensure that there's growth in the future, because we want, of course, to maintain our technological leadership, at least within a few very defined areas. Now, in addition to that, as you saw, there are a number of restructuring announcements this last week. They have to do with the continued work on our cost structure, restructuring the company, talk about an elimination of approximately 20,000 positions over the next 12 months. At the last DVN, I spoke about the need to get down to at least approximately 65,000 employees worldwide for our level of revenue in order to be competitive. We talked about that in terms of a two-year program. As we got into the details of this, it's quite clear that we need to accomplish that restructuring in a one-year time frame, and it's also what our employees are asking us to do, is to get the downsizing, at least these major downsizings, behind us so we can focus on growth and focus on the future. And so we're going to accelerate that into the next 12 months, and as much as possible, we will be done within this calendar year, as much as we can in a thoughtful and planful way. And a lot of people are working on that right now. In addition to that, we'll continue the elimination of the facilities and office space that we don't need, some of which we never needed that we had in our inventory. We're going to take out another 10 million square feet or so. This will take us down at the end of the next couple of years to about 24 million square feet. This turns out to be about half the number of square feet the company had in facilities and office space in 1990, which was sort of our peak, when we started, as you recall, in restructuring manufacturing. To do all of that and to pay for the transition of employees that will have to leave our company, we've taken a charge against fourth quarter earnings of $1.2 billion. It's a cash charge. In addition to that, there will be a charge of between $300 and $400 million that relates to some acquisitions that we made in the past that no longer have the value that they're being carried on our balance sheet, and also some tax considerations, and so we'll clean all that up. If you think about it, going forward, digital will have a very clean balance sheet. That's a very strong balance sheet, and we'll have the opportunity by business unit to be profitable and to measure our success by business unit very clearly. In terms of that balance sheet strength, it's frequently not noticed. The digital will have a balance sheet, even after the restructuring, that's in the top 10, it's one of the best of the top 50 companies in the Fortune 500. And for that matter, in the Fortune 500, we will remain in the top quartile in terms of the balance sheet strength. So the company has a very strong balance sheet. We're not about to go out of business. We do need to start managing our affairs more effectively. We've got to start generating a profit. And as you know, I've stated publicly that our objective is to generate a profit from operations by the end of the calendar year. That, again, is additional reason to do as much of the downsizing as we possibly can at the in the next 6 months. Now, as you talk to people, as you get out and talk to employees, there are several questions on your mind, some of which I'm going to address up front, I hope, but I'll be happy if I'm not thorough enough to take your questions after on the same subjects, and others of which we hope that you'll ask after this presentation. One of the key questions, of course, is, am I going to have a job? But people want to know, are they going to be employed? Now, what are the areas that we'll be doing the downsizing? How will they be impacted? People want to know what's different about this restructuring, although I've covered some of that already, and that this is building on our previous successes and learning from what works and what doesn't work in the marketplace of the 1990s. And hopefully be able to give you some confidence. I have a lot of confidence in this new organization and the leadership that we have in place. Hopefully you'll be able to gain some of that confidence. Well, will you have a job? Was the first question. Well, as I mentioned at one of the previous DVNs, I can't guarantee your job. I can't even guarantee my own job. The only person that can guarantee that we remain employed are our customers. They're the people with the money. We have the products and services, and the object of the enterprise is to make a profitable exchange. Now, sometimes we make the exchange without it being profitable. We have to work on that. But the issue is, we have to service our customers more successfully than our competitors if we want to stay employed. And we've got to get our enterprise sized to a level that is cost effective. I want to show you a tape. This is an excerpt of the conversation I had with the top 150 managers from across a variety of different functions at the last meeting, which was the computer systems division sort of kickoff meeting. I was talking to them about what I'd learned from a recent employee survey that we did. You know, we did a worldwide employee survey, and a lot of what came back was certainly no surprise to me looking at it. But there are a couple of points that I think really needed some emphasis, and hopefully this tape will cover those, and you'll see that I'm quite serious about it, having talked to my management in this fashion. Going out and talking to our employees wherever I go, I find a lot of motivated people out there, people that want to contribute. Yesterday, I sent through, not very long, a presentation of the results of our Gallup poll. You may remember that we took a little poll here worldwide to find out what employees are thinking. It's not that pleasant, and yet there are a couple of positive things. Worldwide, you'll get more data than I'm going to give you here, but worldwide, a couple positive things, and one that's a real challenge to us in this room. Positive things is that employees care about this company, and you know that. Positive things is that even if they're impacted in the downsizing, they wish us well and our success. The challenge is that overwhelmingly, they say we're not asking them to do enough. They say that we in management are not asking them to stretch. And they don't feel engaged. They don't feel that their full capabilities are being brought to bear on this crisis that we have. Each of us has a responsibility, and I'm taking mine this morning, to ask everyone to get engaged, to participate. And you have a responsibility to listen to what they have to offer. Because as everybody in here knows, at a theoretical level, whoever's closer to the work knows more about it. We're not all that great about listening, and we're not near as great as we think we are, based on this survey, about empowering our employees to participate. We are not going to succeed in turning this enterprise around unless we get the full participation from the employees that remain in it to contribute to that turnaround. You and I, and the people that report to you, and so on in this company, have that responsibility. So that's fairly clear, and it's a message that each of us has to think about and internalize, is you should be looking to your management for a clear understanding of what your job function is and how you can add more value to the company, and you should not be satisfied with a management that can't provide you with that direction and guidance and leadership. And I have to make sure that my managers are thinking more expansively of how to engage all of our employees on a worldwide basis in the turnaround of this enterprise. Now, if you think about Digital's value proposition and our strategy and what it is we offer going forward, it's very clear. We said about a year ago that Digital was going to be a leader in open client server computing. This is a similar statement. It means the same thing, slightly different words. It talks about the fact that we have the ability, directly and through our partners, to implement and support networked platforms and applications in heterogeneous environments more quickly and more effectively, more countries than anyone else. What does that mean again? It means that customers that are almost all grappling with that problem of how to get a heterogeneous environment, that is one that consists of different hardware, different operating systems, different applications, to function efficiently in their enterprise on platforms that deliver good performance and good price performance. How do they do that? This is a credible statement. It builds on digital's history of essentially having invented distributed computing, of being a leader in enterprise-wide networking, of understanding technically what's necessary in order to deliver a solution that lets applications interoperate on a network. Not just anybody can do that. It's much easier to describe than it is to make happen, and customers will pay for that. This requires that we retain the core technologies necessary to deliver that message or that promise. That depends, of course, on our platforms, which are based on two architectures, the Intel architecture and the Alpha AXP architecture. These architectures are complementary in that you have the widest possible range of platform performance from Digital Equipment Corporation, which includes Intel from portable computers, desktop, desk side, servers, and Alpha on top of that with higher performance. And we support three operating systems. Digital's open, as opposed to what we had been a couple of years ago, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. We offer the highest performance. Now, as we go forward through this restructuring, we have to keep our minds on a few important principles that are driving everything that we're doing here in management. I thought I'd share some of those with you. The first is that it's important that we protect our install base. That means that we ensure that customers that have invested with Digital's products and services in the past are taken care of as we move forward, pruning some of our offerings and managing our way into the future. The asset base that we have, the loyal customers that want Digital to be successful, is our most important asset. And so we're certainly going to protect that. Anything that you read about in terms of divestments or strategies around Digital will have that uppermost in our minds. In addition to that, we have to organize our company to reflect market realities. It's unfortunate that the world is the way it is somehow, but we have to understand that and organize Digital in such a way that we are competitive in today's environment and not the environment of the past. That's what we've been talking about in terms of this restructuring. It means that we have to depend on partners. We can't do everything ourselves. And it means that for those partners to put their applications on our platforms and move those platforms through their channels of distribution, that we have to stop competing with the major strategic partners that we have. This has implications on our portfolio of activities, and we're keeping those in mind as we go forward. We have to build on our strengths, which are network computing, platform technology, the ability to build balanced systems, understanding, again, the elements of that core value proposition that I spoke about. We need to engineer our products so that they're ready for network interaction. For example, internet ready would be a good example. As you know, we are investing in developing technology for the internet. It'd be good if our products came ready to go. We need to differentiate ourselves with respect to our global service and support capabilities, which is one of our key differentiators when compared to most competitors. And so we think about all of that as we make this organizational change and as we move forward. Taken together, this is going to enable us to be far more agile, responsive, customer-focused, and we should be able to expand our business through these other channels. And that is essential for Digital. If you think about the financials of this thing, I see I'm going to walk in front of it. You think about the financials of the company over the last 21 months. It's been difficult. We've only had one good quarter. Most of the quarters we've been improving for the first five, and then we had that Q3, which was a real wake-up call for all of us. Big surprise. And yet, if we focus too much on that, we might miss all of the things that we've actually accomplished in the last 2 years, some of which quite dramatic. Now, you've been here, some of you at least, for a long time. Just think back, 2 years ago. 2 years ago, Digital was described as being a closed, proprietary mini computer company. Our primary way of generating a profit was we raised our prices every year. We were fortunate because our largest competitor raised their prices more. So we look like we're giving you a bargain if we only raise our prices a little bit. Those days are gone forever. Those days are gone forever. Closed proprietary 2 years ago. Today, we are considered open, and that least likely to lock in a customer quote is from an article in Gartner, one of the analysts that studies the computer industry. And they said digital is the least likely to lock you in as a customer with some proprietary operating system. That is a dramatic change in perception. Not all of the customers have yet totally internalized that, but they will because they read these reports, it gets picked up, and it begins to change the image of our company, and we certainly are different. 2 years ago, we had, unfortunately, inferior performance in our products, and we had inferior price performance as a result. Today, as you all know, because of our Alpha AXP architecture, we have leadership performance. Nobody even argues anymore about who has the hottest performing systems. Alpha is the hands-down winner, the first fully 64-bit implementation, the only one that runs a 64-bit operating system, clearly ahead of the competition, and we are a price performance leader in all of the price bands in less than 2 years. 2 years ago, we had a very inferior Unix. We didn't believe in Unix. We didn't invest in Unix. And customers want to buy Unix. Most of the growth in the last few years in the system side has been with the Unix operating system. That growth has been enjoyed by our competitors because ours was inferior. In less than 2 years, our engineering team, with a lot of hard work and a lot of investment, has brought us from way behind to absolute leadership, according to some analysts. A couple articles in the June timeframe, one from Gartner again, one from D.H. Brown. The D.H. Brown article, they benchmarked Digital's Unix against all of the major competitors and some very minor competitors and declared that we were the leader. I mean, I don't even make quite that expansive a claim with our customers, but I do say we're absolutely among the leaders. The Brown article said we're the leader. We have the best implementation of a second-generation Unix in leadership position in terms of capabilities and performance. 2 years ago, we were hopelessly inferior. 2 years ago, our PCs were considered primarily a joke in the sense that it was well known that we had tried in the early 80s and failed, tried again in the late 80s and failed, appeared to be trying in the 1990s and failing to take PCs seriously and to be a real player in the PC market. We've been identified by several, including DataQuest, that in the last 2 years, Digital has had the fastest growing PC business in the world. And today, our PCs are well respected for the quality, reliability, and capability. And we're growing, as I mentioned earlier, at more than 100% per year. And we're profitable, which is no small feat in the PC business. We're going to continue to grow strongly there. We now have a business that just finished at about $1.5 billion run rate. Next year, it'll be more than a $2 billion business and profitable in just 2 years. New talent. A new organization. One of the key things when we attracted Enrico Pessitori to the company to run the PC business is I made a clear decision, and there are a lot of people advising me not to do it, made a clear decision to have the engineering for PCs, the marketing and sales channels for PCs, the whole thing for PCs separate. And there are people saying, no, we want that to be part of our central functional matrixy stuff. I'm saying, no, I want to set that up separately. Like Charlie Crist's disk business had been separate. Like our semiconductor operations had been separate. You begin to get a trend here. Those things that were separate in lean and line organizations were successful. And Enrico delivered and is getting promoted as a result to run the computer systems division. Another executive that certainly delivers, Charlie Crist. He took our disk business, which was headed really into obsolescence. I mean, we were pursuing a strategy of ever bigger disks, ever more expensive investments with little return, the wrong approach entirely, and brought us into the modern SCSI disks, high capacity, high reliability, high performance, and profitable at the top end of the market did an excellent job, and Charlie's been promoted, as I mentioned, to run the components division. So it's good that we focus on these successes. We talk about what have we been able to accomplish, and there's other accomplishments as well. So we talk about the conflicts that we've had with our partners. Partners, whether they're distributors, value-added resellers, had come up to me and said how extraordinarily difficult it is to do business with digital, to support their applications or their products on our platforms. But we've made a lot of progress. A couple of years ago, less than a third of our products, talking about products now, less than a third moved through indirect channels. In the year just ended, it'd be about 55%. Next year, we're going to drive that to over 60%. The goal is 63%. This is primarily because of the success we had in the business units that drove those indirect channels, PCs, discs, and Larry Cabernetti's components and peripherals. Larry, in particular, developed a lot of new channels that had never done business with digital, through which we moved all kinds of peripheral products. Things like our single board computers to the OEMs, things like our videos, our printers, were very successful. We can continue that success. It's a much lower cost way of delivering our products to our customers, and we have to do that. You know, 2 years ago, we didn't even have any Alpha AXP systems. Hadn't shipped any yet. We had the chips. We hadn't shipped any systems. And today, we have a full line of Alpha AXP systems, as well as Intel architecture systems. We didn't have any applications. Today, we have almost 6,000 applications for our Alpha AXP systems. About half are for Unix, and a few hundred for Windows NT. A couple of years ago, we had all matrix structure, essentially, no accountability, and no ability really for management at hardly any level to understand where we made money and where we lose money, where the investments pay off and where they don't. We've been moving steadily toward a much more accountable structure, and as I mentioned, we now have a structure that we've just implemented that not only includes revenue, costs, and profit, but also the balance sheet items, the assets employed in the business. And each of those business units has its own model so that you can measure it and benchmark it against external competition. And that is the benchmark, is the external competition. I'm quite optimistic, frankly, about these changes. They're based on what we've learned worked. They're based on proven executives that came in and contributed and made a real impact on our company, or that had been here before and demonstrated their leadership and are being promoted. With that kind of leadership and commitment, with a dedication to this turnaround, with our employee involvement, there's no question in my mind that we will return to profitability. We need to have that profitability from operations by the end of the second quarter. The reason we need that is we need to restore confidence in our customers about digital's prospects. Today, some of our customers are reluctant to buy our products and services because our competition is telling them we're not going to make it. It's far from true. Balance sheet is stronger than that of most of our competitors. But until we start generating a profit, there'll always be some doubt in some of those customers. We need to return to profitability quickly. We have the talent that we need to do that. We have the organizational structure we need to do that. We have a value proposition that is credible with our customers. We have a strategy to implement. We need everybody involved. With that kind of involvement, there's no question in my mind that digital will return to profitability and will begin to grow again, which is a good deal more fun than all of the downsizing and cost reductions that we've been having to go through. Now, with that, I'd like to answer any questions that you might have about any of these remarks, something I didn't cover that you were interested in, whatever. It's very informal, and I would appreciate your questions, so don't be bashful here if somebody would ask one. If you don't ask one, I generally bring a handful. Yes, at the back there.
Yeah. Bob, good morning. You mentioned earlier that one of our six operating principles, the second one, was to organize and manage to market realities. And it's clear that our benchmarking targets have been Hewlett-Packard and IBM. However, it's real clear that both of those companies have recently made some very serious investments organizing their businesses around industries on a business unit basis. We've just made some investments in the opposite direction, organizing our company around business units based on product. I'd just like you to comment on that. Is that a misperception, or what's the strategy there?
Well, it's a matter of balance. In the case of your observation about Hewlett-Packard and IBM, those are two of the companies we benchmark, but actually we benchmark many others. It depends on which piece of our business we're looking at. If we're talking about, for example, our multi-vendor customer services, we tend to look at those companies. If we're talking about personal computers, we tend to benchmark against Compaq. If we're talking about the core systems business, that again, we look at Sun Microsystems as well as HP. But in any event, your observation about how you organize. HP has been traditionally organized as a Sun Microsystems around their products. The industry focus that Digital had, and that we need to keep within the selected industries by account that we're focused on, didn't work as well for the reason that I mentioned, and that we didn't. It wasn't that we were organized around the wrong dimension. You could organize as easily around industries as you can around products. It didn't work as well because of the matrix way that we tried to implement it as opposed to a clean line organization. The IBM company is trying to do what we did a couple of years ago. I hope they have the same level of success. And my guess is they will. It'll be very difficult, again, to break down the traditional fiefdoms and stovepipes within the IBM company. And that was part of our problem. You couldn't get everybody to agree, even though they gave it the deck nod, which has to be completely obliterated from this company. They gave it the deck nod and said, yeah, I'll go along with it. They didn't really. And so that was why that didn't work out. Having an industry focus around your applications, your solutions, and your investments in systems engineering and systems integration is important, because you can replicate then the skills that you develop if you're doing that by industry. And we still have a lot of our accounts out there organized by industry for that reason. Hope that helps. Other questions? Yes.
Hi, Bob. I was delighted to hear you reference the internet. And my question to you is, are you committed to provide internet accessibility to all employees?
We are going to provide internet accessibility. Today we have it to Digital's EasyNet through gateways and through a software product we call Seal, which is a secure software product. The idea is to be able to share information and learn things on the internet. On the other hand, I have some concerns about networking in general and the use of email and the internet for non-business purposes. And what we have to do is try to find the right balance. Digital has more capability and understanding because of a core of very talented technical people. And we just recently said, gee, we ought to make a business model of providing services around the internet. And our digital consulting group is providing that today in web servers. Web servers that are a combination of hardware and software and service expertise that lets companies connect to the internet without fear of losing their own security of their data through this web server secure gateway. We've now asked Roseanne Giordano to lead that business unit within the Advanced Technology Group and nurture that and look for other opportunities to develop products and services for the marketplace, which would be delivered through each of the business units as appropriate. So that's an area of growth for the future. We're going to expand on our video on demand successes that we had under Sultan Zia's leadership within Charlie Crist's group. We're going to expand on that to bring interactive multimedia across all of our platforms. So there's a lot of things here that have to do with future technologies, as well as working on the current problems around our costs, which we have to do. Other questions? Yes.
Hi, Bob. In terms of restructuring our chip-making operations, what do you see as a range of options under valuation, and when do you expect to make an announcement?
Oh, that's a very good question. We've had a number of articles that says that I've been talking with semiconductor companies about one way or another reducing the cost to Digital of being in the manufacturing and process development piece of the semiconductor business, and that's true. I've talked with several of the major semiconductor companies, and Ed Caldwell, who's the vice president of the semiconductor business unit, is quite active in exploring different alternatives. And the idea is simply this. If you looked at our South Queensferry facility, it was underutilized for our needs. We couldn't fill it up. We struck a deal with Advanced Micro Devices to build products of their design for them, in this case, Advanced Micro Devices version of the Intel 486 architecture. And we're going to build up to a couple million circuits a year for them, which completely fills up our South Queensbury facility and makes our costs competitive there. Similarly, as you know, we've just brought online a leading, technically, semiconductor facility here in Hudson, Massachusetts. 8-inch, 0.35 micron, that'll go all the way down to 0.2 micron, to build future generations of the Alpha architecture. Whenever you build a semiconductor facility, you build some minimum size, and it's quite a while before you can fill it up, because obviously your business has to grow to fill it up. In the meantime, there's a lot of cost associated with that facility. So we're exploring, okay, is there a way to talk with companies who are capacity constrained today, and there's several out there. There's been so much interest in it, because one, people respect digital semiconductor capability around microcomputer technology, since we're hands down the leading high-performance integrated circuit supplier in terms of performance. We're small, but very high performance, very focused. So there's a lot of respect there. They understand we have the capability and technology. There's a lot of capacity constraint out there. I think we'll be able to find a partner that will help us lower those costs. That'll let us return to profitability sooner. And so those are the kinds of things we're looking. And in fact, in each one of our businesses, in every element of each business, we have to look at it and decide, are we going to keep all of it? Are we going to let somebody else do a piece of it? For example, this week, probably today, you will see a confirmation of the fact that we have been working with Quantum to take on pieces of our storage business. In particular, we're going to sell to Quantum our heads business, tapes business, the disk business, the components business. We wouldn't be able to do that had Charlie and his team not been so successful in bringing us up to a leadership position. We'll be able to sell to Quantum that business for approximately $400 million. That will provide cash in our company so that we continue our restructuring. At the same time, Quantum will become a big supplier to digital, and we will retain in our storage organization, reporting to Charlie, the storage systems business, the video on demand business is also going to be retained by digital. And so Quantum supplies our technology to us, but that is their total business, disk business. It's not essential that we be in the disk business. There are many other things that are essential. We're quite good at it, but it's not essential that we be in it. So both to improve our focus on the things that we have to be about our core, that we have to be focused on, and also to bring in additional cash to the company, it made sense to let Quantum take on that business. Now, a point I'd like to make, by the way, that Charlie and I discussed quite frequently, we had several companies interested in that business. One reason we chose Quantum is because that company has more synergy with digital and our way of doing things, and there was less overlap between their product line and our product line. What that means is that there are more employees today in digital storage that will still be employed at Quantum. It's quite important to me in my job function that even if they can no longer be employed by digital, that those employees have a job. And they're still working for digital because we're one of their largest customers. Some of the other suitors for that business had too much overlap with us, and in fact, if they acquired that technology, a lot of our employees would have to be let go because of the overlap. So all that stuff figures in when you're trying to decide what you keep, what you don't keep. The general direction, though, is in line with those six principles that I described to you. We got to focus on what's core to our business. It is absolutely core, for example, to go over it again, to retain the ability to do the integrated circuit designs and implement those architectures for Alpha. But we don't have to manufacture the product. We have to have someone manufacture the product for us, if not us. Those are the kinds of things you have to think about. Other questions?
Bob, yes. I just want to ask you, pick up on your last discussion. Computing and communications are converging real quickly, both in terms of the industry infrastructure mergers and acquisitions that are taking place, and in terms of what our customers are asking us for. So leapfrogging after we've fixed our company up and we are incredibly profitable at the end of this year, have you and are you contemplating any sort of relationship, whether it's a straight-out merger and or straight-out acquisition by a telco, or a much stronger alliance with a telco where it becomes a win-win? We flesh out for them a competence they clearly don't have in computing structures, and they flesh out for us something that we clearly need going forward, which is the communications infrastructure.
We have not considered, to be clear about that, we have not considered any mergers or acquisitions. In the strategy for digital going forward, we'd prefer to remain an independent enterprise, and we are a very large enterprise at that. But we have the capabilities, as you suggest, to augment the technologies of various telecom companies. We have talked to a number of different telecom companies about increasing strategic relationships, but not to an exclusivity point of view. If you think about, if we said, okay, we want to partner only with this telecom company, you exclude too much of the rest of the marketplace. We would like to have strategic alliances with a variety of companies, depending on what service that they're trying to provide. At this moment, at least, the strategy that seems to make the most sense to us is that we provide the platforms that support the convergence of data and telecommunications in general for those telecoms. And there's a wide variety of different ways we would partner and work with them. That's not to say that we wouldn't be open to it, and in fact, we're constantly looking at opportunities. We could partner with one of the telecoms to go after a specific market opportunity. And you'll see, as a matter of fact, more partnerships in general that have real meat with them in terms of companies, not only telecoms, but software companies or whatever. We need to have, as I mentioned in my presentation several times in the past even, we have to have these partnerships because we can't do everything ourselves. But clearly, we're in an excellent position. As you rightly point out, there is a confluence of communications, computing, and media. It's coming together, and we have the capability to be a major player in that new opportunity. It's developing this decade. We have the technology and the resources to be a leader in that. And that is a lot of our future strategy with respect to this company. Other questions?
Yes, Bob. Can you tell me, if we're going to be focusing on 1,000 customers, what messages we should have, both for those 1,000 and for those that we won't focus on directly?
What we are, the question relates to the new structure that has to do with the accounts business unit. One of the things that is quite obvious about digital systems business is that we have a very large number of people and accounts that we call on with a direct sales force. And it doesn't compute on a cost basis. If you were to look at our accounts, all of the accounts by revenue, you find that after you get to the top 1,000 or so, the amount of revenue on the average from those other accounts doesn't support a direct sales force. So we have to reach those customers in the fashion that most of our competitors do, through distributors, value-added resellers, and other indirect channels. That means that in the next 6 months or so, we're going to transition from a largely direct infrastructure to one that's much more reliant on channels for all of those customers, say, beyond our top 1,000. Now, today, we service about 8,000 to 10,000 accounts directly. And again, about 1,000 worldwide will actually support a full-time direct sales force serviceability on those accounts. So that's the transition that we'll be going through. Much of our restructuring will be in that organization so that we can deliver our products and services cost-effectively to our customers. It does not mean that we're going to neglect those other 7,000, 8,000, 10,000 customers. We're just going to service them in a more effective channel. It also means, as a matter of fact, for all of our customers, we're going to retain the ability in multi-vendor customer services and digital consulting capabilities. We have to retain those capabilities to support those customers. But we have to do so profitably. If you looked at all of the activity we've been on, and just think about it, in the last 2 years, we've taken 31,000 people out of our company and all of the costs associated with it, and we're still not competitive. If you looked at why not, fundamentally because we had grown so overstaffed as a result of matrix management. Matrix management requires a lot of infrastructure and interface, and customers no longer will pay for that. And so the bulk of this downsizing that we're doing has to do with the elimination of that matrix management structure, and then as a corollary to that, the infrastructure that supported that architecture, the interfaces. That's the direction we're going in order to get cost competitive. But that's not the whole story. Another piece of the story has to do with gross margins on our products. Just talking about products now, not the services. On the product side, we have a significant disadvantage against our largest competitors on gross margin. And yet we have leadership products in terms of reliability, in terms of quality, in terms of performance. But we have about 10 points of margin differential between our company and the leaders in similar products. If you look at that 10 points, you find it's distributed not entirely equally, about a third, a third, a third. Part of it is manufacturing costs that are not competitive, we're working on. Part of it is design. It was, the way it was designed, it couldn't be manufactured cost competitively. It used an older style design as opposed to using standard components, a PC-centric design, if you will. And we're fixing that. And part of it is a lack of discipline in the field with respect to pricing guidelines. It's that the issue of we've trained our customers, if they just wait to the end of the quarter, they can get a little bit more discount, a little bit more allowance from this company. Now, we've been working on that. You know, that was a large part of our problem in Q3. We've been working on that. Enrico Pessatori and his team have put in some guidelines, some controls. It's too early yet to say in Q4 how well did they work. But one thing's very clear. We're going to fix our design for manufacturing so that things can be cost-effectively manufactured. We're going to fix our manufacturing logistics so that we pick up the gross margin we're losing there. But we are going to fix this pricing discipline problem. You know, it's not widespread. A number of our people go out there, work hard, and they know when to walk away from a sale. But we have a few that go out there and will sell the product at any price, bringing down the overall margins in our company and putting their associates out of a job as a result. That's not going to happen or be tolerated in the future. We've got some guidelines in there, some controls. I want to be quite serious about this. We are not going to tolerate a lack of discipline around pricing. Other questions?
Yes, Bob. This morning you've been able to be pretty specific around a lot of quite specific questions, and mm-hmm. I, for one, appreciate it. Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask you a general question, though, and that is, after we get through this phase two, as you've described it, after we divisionalize, we stop the red ink and those sorts of things, what is your vision of what we're going to be like further out than that, say 2 years or 3 years, you name the time? What are we going to look like, and how are we going to be in the industry? You know, what's that going to look like?
I think that digital will be a leader, not only in the area that we've identified, which is, again, around networked computing, client-server platforms and that, but a leader in this emerging area of interactive multimedia, and what does that mean? Now, I think that digital has extraordinarily good technology for that. You know, if you looked at just a small piece of it, the emerging piece, video on demand piece, I'm led to believe that we've won more competitions in video on demand, providing platforms to provide that, than any other company. We have been successful because of the architecture that was designed within the storage group, because of the capabilities, the combination of capabilities that digital has. It's a systems engineering problem. It's how to bring together the high-performance processor, the network capability, the understanding of balance in terms of designing a platform, and do it in such a way that it's open and low cost. And we've been very successful. Now, that's in a whole bunch of trials, a lot of different companies, some of which have been announced, some of which haven't, international companies. As those trials go, some of them will be successful, some won't, but the follow-on business there is really potentially unlimited. People are going to lose a lot of money in this interactive environment that's developing, but people are going to make a lot of money. And digital, by providing superior products and services for that market, has the opportunity to be a major player toward the end of this decade. And it's not a five-minute thing. This is a year-in, year-out investment, perseverance. It takes time. But we have the talent to do that, and I expect that that's where we will distinguish ourselves and all elements of that convergence or confluence that you mentioned. Yes.
We haven't been doing a very good job of operational planning. I was wondering whether or not there were anything in process to improve the planning process so that operational folks could understand better, more clearly what to do.
Well, you're quite right. On the planning side of the company, we've never distinguished ourselves. And again, it's the root cause of that has to do with matrix management. This is the only company I ever worked for, ever, that manufacturing was supposed to forecast what was going to be built. That's very strange. You know, and manufacturing had an interface organization between manufacturing and sales operations that attempted to guess what sales were going to come in with. Now, this new organization, and there was no feedback loop at all, nor was anyone in sales told that that was inappropriate. So this new organization makes it very clear from a P&L point of view and a responsibilities point of view who is responsible for making that planning. In normal companies, the sales organization has to forecast in detail, not just this many dollars, which is our style, but in detail, what is their expectation of this many workstations, that many servers, this many PCs, and so forth. And they essentially own that inventory. Manufacturing's job function is not to guess whether sales is right or wrong or whatever, and not to employ thousands of people who guess with each other and futz paper around and all of that, which customers won't pay for. Manufacturing's responsibility is to deliver what's ordered to the right inventory points so that you can pull it when you get the order. We don't build a whole lot of stuff and stick it in the stock room, hope for the best in today's environment. But you get the inventory staged in such a way that when you receive the order, you can build the system to that order quickly. That's manufacturing's role. So clarifying the roles and responsibilities with feedback mechanisms that let people know when they're doing well and when they're not doing well and they need to improve. So we developed tools for this purpose. We haven't done a good job at that. In the past, in the days the company was just booming, that wasn't a priority. Today, there, you can't be sloppy. We have a lot of sloppy habits in our management culture, you might say. You can't afford it. Just can't afford it. So sloppiness is out. Moving out with alacrity is in. Focusing on adding real value. Being committed to the company. Again, as I said in that report that we took worldwide, it wasn't that I expected things would come up roses. We're in trouble. The company's in crisis. Of course people have concerns. Worldwide, the concerns are similar. But I really was struck by those two points. Worldwide, our employees, everywhere I go and everywhere that was surveyed, they're dedicated to this company. They're hardworking. They're willing to do more was one point. And the other point is, we in management are not asking enough of our employees. You in management are not asking enough. One of the things I've noticed about our company is there is an awful lot of standing around waiting for something to come down from the top that solves all the problems. I mean, that is not going to happen. My perception of how you can turn the company around is get everybody involved, everybody contributing, everybody looking for opportunities, and management needs to listen and be responsive and provide the leadership so that that empowerment can actually exist. We talk a good game here, but based on the survey, we're not doing so well in management. Now, you can be sure I'm going to hammer on this theme with those individuals that report to me and the ones that report to them, the levels that I come in contact with on a day-to-day basis. And you are empowered, all of you in the audience here, worldwide, to be stimulating your management to earn their money, to do more, to ask the right things, to provide the leadership that they're being paid to provide. This is a mutual relationship, isn't it? We are all on the same team here. We have different job functions, but we're all on the same team. And we have a responsibility to each other to really work, to really contribute, to be engaged. If we do that, if we discharge that responsibility to each other, there's no question that we will return to profitability and we will achieve a leadership position in the markets of the future. Thank you very much.